Well, this morning we're finishing our series that we've been calling From A to B, One Step at a Time. And we've been talking about faith and what it looks like to take steps in our faith, to deepen our faith, and to live a pleasing life to God as we live in faith. And hopefully you've picked up a number of things about what it is to live in faith and to exercise your faith throughout this series. There's a couple of kind of big picture ideas of what faith looks like that are really not what faith is all about. One of them is sometimes we think of faith a little bit like how we treat Santa Claus. We think that faith is about telling God all the things that we think we need or the things that we want, giving him a list and expecting that if we believe hard enough and if we pray strong enough, then God will give us what we want or what we think that we need. And so some of us have this idea that that's kind of what faith looks like, and it's this passive sitting back and waiting for God to do things that I've asked him to do type of faith. But we've been reading through this chapter in Hebrews 11, and we don't get any hint that that's what faith is all about at all. We see actually a completely different way of responding in faith. There's another way of thinking in terms of what faith is that maybe is a little bit more of a religious way. Sometimes we think of faith, when we think of faith, we think of our beliefs. We think that faith is just a list of beliefs. So I believe that there is a God, and I believe certain theological things about God, and I want to have those right beliefs that are important. But what we've found through the examples of faith that we've seen in Hebrews 11, what we've found reading about it, is that faith is not this passive thing that we sit back and believe that God will do this or do that. Faith is not even things that we believe about God. Faith is when we take our beliefs and we act upon them, when we activate our beliefs, what we believe about God and how we relate to him. And when it becomes reality, when it becomes the way that we make decisions, when it becomes the way that we live our lives on a daily basis, that's when our faith is exercised. And we've talked about the fact that faith is a bit like a muscle. It's something that when we work it out, when we use it, when we exercise it, it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. It's the sense within us that trusts in God no matter what's going on in our lives and allows us to make decisions based on what we believe and actually live out that faith. And I hope that over this series we've found some opportunities to live out our faith, to make decisions on how we're going to live based on our faith, because I believe that every day, in all kinds of different ways, God gives us opportunity to exercise our faith. Every single day, you will have decisions that you will make about who you are and how you're going to live, the kinds of things that you're going to do, the kinds of things you're going to say, how you're going to treat people, that will give you the opportunity to decide whether or not you're going to live and act in faith or not. So let me, by way of a bit of review, talk about where we've come from through this series and talk a little bit about what is involved in growing our faith. And we've seen a number of things in this chapter. For example, one of the things involved in growing our faith is building our character. That's where we started talking about that who we become, our integrity, that is, when we put our beliefs and our actions together and they're the same, they're one holistic thing, is going to come from who or whatever we have faith in, whatever we put our trust in. When we really trust in something, that's going to cause us to live a certain way. And so our integrity or our character, the core of who we are and our moral lives, is going to come from what we really believe in and when we choose to really act on that belief. And so things like our integrity or our morality, how we make decisions about how we're going to treat people or the kinds of relationships we're going to enter into or not into, come from our character. And we build that character through faith and it becomes our identity, who we are. We've talked about the fact that seizing opportunities that God gives us is involved in our faith, that God gives us all kinds of incredible opportunities, and I believe that God is adventurous, and I believe that God is exciting, and he doesn't want us to always make the safe decision to stay where we are, but instead, we've seen examples of people who God called to do incredible things in this world and to make a big difference, and they had that decision whether or not they'd seize the opportunity. And we have so many opportunities in this world, opportunities to help people, opportunities to be unselfish, opportunities to give to those who are in need, opportunities in our career path, whatever that might look like. And some of us are still trying to figure out what that looks like, but to use our career and our jobs for more than just making a paycheck, but instead helping people, serving people, dealing with some of the societal problems that we have in the world, and we have opportunities all over the place, whether it's helping people who are sick, serving people who are in poverty, helping our cities and our countries run in ways that bring harmony to people and make sure that people get what they need. We have so many opportunities that I believe God puts before us to be adventurous and to seize those opportunities and to do great things for Him. Growing our faith involves sacrificing temporal things for eternal things. We talked about the fact that people of faith understand what is going to last and what is going to pass. And so every time we get a paycheck or an income, we have an opportunity with our finances to invest in things that are eternal, not just temporal. To walk away from a society that is very materialistic and say, we understand that we can invest in things that are going to last forever, investing in relationships, investing in loving people, investing in providing for people who don't have enough, investing in God's kingdom work through the church, because we believe in eternal things, and that's what gives meaning to temporal things. So we're willing to sacrifice in the now for later. We've talked about acting on our beliefs about God, being willing to share our beliefs, being willing to share our attitudes and our actions with people around us, knowing that we believe that God is working in this world to bring love to places and people that don't have love, to bring light to dark places in the world, to participate in things like Operation Christmas Child, and saying what we believe makes a difference, and we can make a difference in this world if we're willing to act on those beliefs about God, believing that God wants people to have enough, people who don't have enough, wants people who haven't been showed practical love to be showed practical love. And we talked about how growing in our faith involves overcoming our fears. And so oftentimes in this life, we often see the threats. We see the dangers that are often very real in this world. And this world can be a threatening, dangerous place. And yet, we want to allow our view of God to overwhelm our view of our fears, instead of allowing our fears to overwhelm us and paralyze us from being able to act courageously and to do what God is calling us to do. And so I'm hoping over this series you've caught on to some of those things, latched on to them, and been able to implement them into your life and to take some steps in your faith. Wherever you've been, whether you started out with no faith and you're just taking a step of investigating it, or whether you've had faith for your whole life, decades and decades, but are looking to strengthen that faith, that trust in God. And today I want to talk about three things about sort of the result of faith. What will the result be in our lives of faith? What kind of people should we expect to be as we grow our faith? And I want to talk about three things that faith helps us to do in terms of moving us from one place to another. I believe that faith helps us move from being stuck to being successful. Being in a place where you feel like I can't move forward, or these obstacles are too big, or I can't do that, or that's too big of a dream for me, where you feel like you're stuck, to a place where you're successful. Let me talk about being successful for a second. I don't necessarily mean success in terms of how we always define it and our culture defines it, which is often based around things like status and money and titles and popularity. But I mean success in terms of what God views as success. Being effective in this world, having a purpose, having a meaning, being able to help people, point people towards God, to make a difference in this world around us, in terms of bringing God's kingdom to this world as He invites us to do that by the power of His Holy Spirit. I want you to feel like those dreams that God has put inside of you, you can accomplish them and you can do them. You can go out and make a difference in this world and feel like you're making a difference in this world. I believe that faith helps us move from a place of fear to a place of confidence, a place where we look out at the world and we're scared and we see danger and obstacles, and hurts, and pain, and we're fearful. But I believe faith can help us move to a place of confidence, a place where we can walk out into a dangerous world, a world where there's many threats, a world where there's many pains, and walk in confidence. I believe that our faith helps us move from a place where we feel weak to a place of strength. And I want to tell you why I believe these three things, and I've picked these three things. If you have a Bible and you're following along with us in Hebrews chapter 11, I got these three things, these three movements from verse 33. And we've been looking at all of these people who have lived in faith, by faith Abraham, or by faith Moses, by faith, and this list of people who have given us great example of faith and how faith moved them from one place in their life to another place in their life. And the list goes on and on and on. And we come down to verse 33. And after we've listed all these people, it says, speaking of these people who through faith, and here's what they did. And we see in this verse, there's 9 things listed. There are 3 groups of 3 things that correspond to what I've already talked about, being stuck and being successful, going from fear to confidence and weakness to strength. Here's the first 3. People who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, and obtained promise. People who did big things, people who conquered, people who saw injustice and brought justice. People who obtained promises, looking back in the history of the Bible, where God said, I will give you some great thing, and many of them different things, these great promises that God says, I'm going to give this to you. Many times, things that people had no business achieving on their own, kingdoms that they had no business conquering on their own, but they were able to conquer. They were successful. They made a huge difference because God had given them those things. And their role was to say, yes, God, I will go when you tell me to go. Yes, God, I will act when you tell me to act. Yes, God, I will follow when you tell me we're going somewhere. And God did incredibly huge things for those people. Some of them were very stuck in their culture, stuck in their ways, stuck in their fear. And God, through their faith, made them successful in the world. Successful in God's eyes. He did huge things through their lives because they had faith and they were willing to do it. Here's the second triad. People who stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword. People who went through things that are really, really scary. People who had great fear but were able to conquer that fear with confidence through their faith. People who were given security in unsecure times. People who were saved, delivered from whatever threat there was in their life. People who had something to legitimately fear, but their faith did not stop them. They were able to overcome it with confidence. And notice that confidence in faith is not in themselves, was not saying, I can achieve this, I can get through this, I can do this, but was in the God that was calling them to do something powerful, to do something great. And so they were able to move from fear to confidence. And then finally, the last 3 things. It says they were strong out of weakness, made strong out of weakness. They became mighty in war and put foreign armies to flight. People who were weak were made strong. People who had no business winning battles and wars were able to win them. People who were overpowered were able to send foreign armies to flight, to run away from them because of their faith. Now stop for just a second and imagine you were that kind of person. Imagine you were the kind of person who, instead of being stuck in a rut, did great things for God, accomplished significant things for God's kingdom, pursued the dreams and opportunities that God put in your heart and saw them come to fruition. What if you were the kind of person that, instead of being overwhelmed by your fear, were overwhelmed with a sense of confidence in God? That the things that once held you back, that paralyzed you, that you couldn't get over, that stopped you from pursuing certain things, was replaced by a confidence that God was leading you and would lead you through whatever it is that you were going through and would give you security, that even if you were going through something hard, he would deliver you and save you in the long run. What if in the areas of your life where you're weak, that you think you can't overcome, maybe habits or bad behaviors, you would find a strength, an inner strength that would allow you to endure and pull you through. I believe that if we're willing to take steps in our faith, if we can deepen our trust, that God-given faith that he's given us in the one true creator God, we can be the kind of people who move from being stuck to being successful, who move from being fearful to having confidence, and who move out of a place of weakness to strength. And that's what this chapter is telling us. That's why this is here. this list of people who have given us a great example comes to this point and said, these are people that did these things. And that's where faith brings us. That's where faith takes us. I want to talk about two keys to how we can grow our faith and move in our faith as we work through all of these things. And it goes back to the very first verse of this chapter that we started with 6 weeks ago. Verse 1 of chapter 11 says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." I want to talk about those two things. People who had the assurance of things hoped for and conviction of things not seen, because I think if we can implement those things into our life, we will exercise that muscle, that faith that God has given us, that we trust in Him enough that our lives match up with that. I want to first talk about this and say the people who were able to move from one place to another were able to see the unseen. They were able to see the unseen. Take a look at this in verse 31. "By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets." And then we get to the part that we just read. Who, all of these people who acted in faith, conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, and put foreign armies to flight. These people did incredible things. Instead of seeing the obstacles as too big, instead of focusing on all the reasons why they could not conquer kingdoms, why they could not achieve, why they would not be safe, they saw what was unseen. They saw something bigger. Their faith was that sense that let them know that God was bigger. What they couldn't see, they were able to trust in over and above what they could see, which were all the obstacles. Now, many of us would stop and say, hold on a second, and we would excuse ourselves from putting ourselves in that category because we would say, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I've made mistakes in my life. I'm not a Bible hero. I'm not like those people. I can't do those things. That's not me. Let me tell you something. The whole reason why the writer of Hebrews made this list of Bible heroes of faith was not to tell us that there are certain people in the Bible who could achieve big things. It was to tell us that we're just like them. You say, but I'm not good enough. I've made mistakes. I put myself in bad situations. I don't have that strong a faith. I'm not like these people. You are. If we read through this list, and we could go all the way through the chapter, but I'm going to start just in verse 31 for the sake of time. By faith, Rahab. Who is Rahab? We're talking about a time in Israel's history when God was giving them this great inheritance that they would conquer the promised land. And before they were going in, they sent spies in. And the spies went in to figure out where and how they could infiltrate the city. They could come into the promised land to figure out how big their enemy was and all this kind of stuff. And they were housed and hidden and allowed to escape by Rahab. Rahab was not a Jew, not part of ethnically God's people in the Old Testament of Israel. She was one of the enemy. She was a woman in her culture, not given much chance to be a hero. She was a prostitute. Most people would consider morally bankrupt. She was not this epitome of some great religious figure, but God used her, and she becomes part of this great list of people of faith because she was willing to act in faith, to hide the spies, to take a risk, to sacrifice for something greater. The writer of Hebrews in verse 32 goes on to list Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah. Those are all people who are found in the book of Judges. If you want to go to a place in the Bible where you see some of the weirdest and wackiest, most destructive behavior in the history of mankind, you go to the book of Judges. The book of Judges is filled with the statement that says over and over and over, and then people did what was good in their own eyes. In other words, people were ignoring what God wanted them to do and acting poorly. This is a time in history when things have gone off the rails. This is not a time in history where you say, here's when all the people were doing something right. These were the great, wonderful heroes that never did anything wrong. And if you look at their individual stories, Gideon, when he was asked to go out and fight for God, he was like, whoa, God, I got to test you first. I got to make sure. He didn't jump up and say, I've got the faith. I want to go. He said, God, I got to test you and test you and test you. Barak, same thing when he was called. He had to be dragged into it by Deborah. He was a judge, but Deborah had to drag him into his fight. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gone. He wanted to push it away. He didn't want any part of it. Samson, a lot of us remember Samson as this heroically strong man, physically strong man. When you read his story over and over and over, he was seduced and fooled and made to look stupid by women who tricked him, stole his strength, gave up his morals. But he was able to come back and be successful for God in faith, even though he had made huge mistakes in his life. Jephthah, lesser known story. Some of you maybe have no idea who Jephthah was. Jephthah made one of the stupidest decisions that we see in the entire Bible. Jephthah was called to win this great battle, and he wanted to win so bad that he promised God. He said, God, whatever comes out of my house first, if you will give me this battle, I will sacrifice to you. I'll kill and sacrifice to you. In his culture, his house would have been a combination between a stable and living quarters for his family. And on the bottom level would have been the stables, and on the top level would have been where people lived. And so Jephthah's assumption was that when he comes back from war victorious, one of his animals is going to come out to meet him, and he'll sacrifice whatever animal that is. And so he makes this oath, not knowing what's going to happen. God, I'll make a deal with you. And if you give me victory, I'll give you whatever comes out of my house. And he comes back victorious in war, ready to sacrifice whatever comes out of his house. And one of his daughters walks out. And Jephthah, so dumb, instead of saying, God, I made a bad promise, fulfills his oath and kills his daughter. How messed up is that? Priorities completely out of whack. These people that we read about, and they conquered, and they overcame, despite who they were, despite their mistakes. We can read on and say, David, you know, the great king in Israel's history, was an adulterer and a murderer. Samuel was this great priestly and prophetic figure, and he couldn't raise his sons properly. He passed off things to them and destroyed things because he couldn't get a grip on his family. These are not perfect people. The whole point of this is to show us that God uses imperfect people to bring about his incredible plan. The whole point of this is to say, you could do this too. And these people saw something bigger than what they saw physically. They were able to see the unseen. They were able to see the God who is greater than their problems, than their shortcomings, than their struggles. God uses imperfect people in accomplishing his promises. You're some of those people. You can do it too. You have to be perfect, but you need to be willing to act in faith. There's this great story in 2 Kings chapter 6 that you can read about. It's the story of Elisha and his servant. And Elisha is a prophet of God, and God calls him to preach a message that's not popular, and all these false prophets decide that they're going to come against Elisha, and they're going to kill him, and they literally bring an army to kill Elisha and the people with him. And listen to this story, how it goes. He has this servant that sees this army come around them and freaks out and doesn't know what to do. Listen to what happens. And when the servant of the man, of Elisha, arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" So he answered, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." I love that. They're standing there, presumably, with just a few guys in this huge army. He says, "Don't worry. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And then Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. All of a sudden, he saw something that was unseen. all of a sudden he saw a spiritual reality. And what he had only seen before was all the obstacles, all the threats, all the danger, all of his enemies. But all of a sudden Elisha prayed, and his eyes of faith were opened, and he realized there was a whole another level that God was working on. And this angelic host appeared, and he saw, those who are with us are more than those who are with them. I wonder if in our prayers we might pray for one another, church, that our eyes of faith might be opened and that we would see that those who are with us are more than those who are with them. That we would realize there's a spiritual battle going on upon which we are on the winning side. That God's power and his presence is working in our lives, and collectively as a church, he is working in this world against the powers of this world, and that we can conquer evil in this world. That he's called us to big things if we would see what we can't see, if we would see the power of God working around us. Sometimes we're so overwhelmed with the threats and the dangers, but we need to be overwhelmed with the power of God that's working in each of us and in us collectively as the church around the world to combat evil in this world. You know, Jesus talked about this when he was talking about the kind of people that would be his followers, the church. And he looked at his disciples, Peter, and Peter means rock, and he said, upon this Peter, upon this rock, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Sometimes as Christians, I wonder if we're so timid when we look at all the things that we can see in the world that scare us, that we shrink back and we think we just need to stand or sit in the corner and cower until you know, God finally banishes us all. But instead, God calls us to be part of his mission to bring love where there isn't love and light where there isn't darkness, to go out on the offensive. He says that the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. You put gates around something that you're defending. What he's saying is that hell is on the defensive. The church is on the offensive. God's on the offensive. He's called us to go to the places that are dark, that are scary, and to bring his message of love and forgiveness and grace and restoration. And so we look in the world, and sometimes we're so scared by all that we see. But what about what we do not see? God's Spirit living inside of us. God's activity working in the world in dark places to bring light. And he's called us to be part of that. And people of faith don't shrink back and say, I'm not good enough. God says, I know you're not good enough. I'm going to make you good enough. And when we acknowledge his Spirit working in our lives, it empowers our faith. It empowers our belief to work in this world. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. There's a spiritual force behind us that these people understood that allowed them to do things that they had no business doing, to conquer when they had no business conquering, when it looked impossible. And I believe that God wants to accomplish things that we think are impossible, that are impossible in our own strength, with his strength, if we're willing to have that kind of confidence, if we're willing to see what we can't always see. Here's the second thing. To exercise our faith and to move from A to B, we need to focus on the future. Have you ever seen the movie Back to the Future? It was in the 80s, before some of your time, but if you haven't seen it, look it up and take a look. It's this story of this crazy scientist who figures out the key to time travel, and he brings this young guy, Marty McFly, along, and they figure out in this cool car how to go back in time, and they go back to fix some things. So they travel back in time, and Marty McFly is this character, and in the present or the future where he's living, things are not looking good. His dad is bullied by his boss that he's been bullied by all the way back since high school, and he's become this timid man that really is living a terrible life. His mom has become an out-of-shape, alcoholic, destructive in her behaviors and unhealthy in all sorts of ways because of the things that she's endured. And so they go back from the future into the past, or what becomes the present. And what you see throughout the movie is Marty McFly doing all kinds of things that nobody understands. He's on a mission, and he does things that people think are so weird, and you wonder, why is he doing that, and why would he ever say that? And the answer the whole time is because he's from the future, and he knows that what's happening in the present makes a significant difference in the future, and he knows what the future can hold, and so he knows the power of his actions in that moment, and even if it looks strange, and even if nobody else understands, he knows what he has to do because he knows that the present makes a difference in the future because he's been there. He knows what some of the consequences are. And Christians are a lot like that. We need to be future focused. God has shown us what the future looks like, what he wants the future to look like, that one day God is going to create a kingdom that is harmonious between him and between people and between people and other people. And he wants to invite everybody to be part of that and to enjoy it. And so when Christians see that one day God is going to act that decisively, that Jesus Christ is going to return and he is going to set all things right, we need to live now with that future focus, with that focus on eternity. Which doesn't say, since that's going to happen one day, nothing matters. It's the exact opposite. Because God is doing that one day, everything we do now matters. Makes a huge difference. Because we know where history's going. We know what the consequences are. And so it gives us meaning and purpose in this life to do significant things. Now you might say, by way of an excuse, I'm not strong enough for that. I don't know if I'm strong enough for that. I don't know if I'm strong enough to endure today and to sacrifice today and to go through hard things today, always waiting for tomorrow. I just don't know if I can endure in this life, because as much as I said right now that I believe God wants us to be successful, and I believe that's true, that doesn't guarantee that we're going to have an easy existence. It doesn't mean that we're not going to have struggles and trials. Look, verse 35. We go on talking about how some of these people endured, and some of them won great victories, and some of them endured great defeats. Women received back their dead by resurrection, which means women lost their children. We see in the prophets Elisha and Elijah, there was a couple of women that they went to had lost children, and through God's power, they had brought them back to life. Some people were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. That word torture, it's actually a specific word, and we find it in the literature when it refers to the Maccabees. The Maccabees were a family, a Jewish family between when the Old Testament was written and when Jesus came on the scene and the New Testament starts, called the intertestamental period. And they were a group of Jews who were looking forward to God bringing his Messiah and restoring his kingdom. And there was a group of them who were captured and were offered release if they would just compromise their beliefs, their faith, if they would just give in and live like everybody else, if they denied their God. And there was this group of people who were not willing to do it, and therefore they were tortured and killed when they could have been released if they just compromised, if they just gave up their faith, but they weren't willing so that they might rise up to a better life because they believed that God had a better future for them, something in eternity. Others suffered mocking and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. We think of many of the prophets of the Old Testament. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. Probably refers to Isaiah. There's a book that's not in our Bible, but is written about Isaiah. And tradition has it from that book that Isaiah went to his death because the false prophets hated his message that he was bringing of God so much, and he would not renounce it, that they cut him in two after torturing him because he wouldn't go back on his word. Some were killed with the sword. Martyrs. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated. These people were poor. Everything was taken from them, of whom the world was not worthy. They were living on a different level. The world around them wasn't even worthy of them. Wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And all of these people who were willing to endure so much pain in this world, though they were commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised. They didn't get it in this life. They were still waiting for something in the future, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. The writer's pointing us to something, to the fact that these people went through so much hardship and they never got what we've got. They never got to see Jesus. They still had hope that he was coming in the future, the great deliverer, the one who would save God's people, the one who had changed the entire world. They were still looking forward, and they endured so much pain and so much hardship, and they never got it. And the writer of Hebrews is saying to us, but you guys got it. Their faith was never complete, but you have something that completes their faith, because we get to look back on the historical fact that Jesus Christ was crucified and was resurrected, that he defeated every enemy, even death, what they were looking forward to, saying it's worth it, it's worth it, it's worth it, because one day God's going to raise us from the dead. We have the proof in Jesus Christ, and we look back, and because he was resurrected, we know that we're resurrected one day with him. And they didn't have that yet, but they still had faith that one day God was going to do something. The writers of Hebrews is saying, if they were that strong, you can be that strong. If you put your faith in Jesus, you can be that strong. Faith doesn't fail even when we do. Faith allows us to accomplish exceptional victories. We've talked about that. But also to endure exceptional defeat, knowing that God has promised us eternity. He puts dreams in our hearts and we can accomplish huge things. And we can also endure when it looks like we're failing in this life and hurting and tortured and persecuted and on the bottom. And if they could do it, you could do it by faith. So in the next chapter, he says, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, people who have gone before us and had faith, and they're cheering us on, and they're saying, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, you can win big victories, you can endure big defeats. Let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race that is before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. The greatest example of faith and endurance and being able to work through anything that happens in this world is Christ, who would endure the cross, who would endure torture, who would be killed because he saw something greater. He saw the joy of putting faith in his Father. He saw the joy of resurrection and the defeat of death and of sin. And therefore, he was willing to give himself up now for something greater. The writer of Hebrews says, you can do it. Look to Jesus. You have all these people who have gone before you who didn't just have beliefs but acted on their beliefs, and they were looking forward to that. So cling to Jesus, not everything else. Throw everything else off and run in faith. Make your whole life about this. The author and perfecter of our faith. Exercise that faith. Make it strong. It'll change your life. Not just a few beliefs out there. Not just a list that you're writing to Santa Claus of things that you want. It'll make you a different person, successful, confident, strong, all in the ways that God would define them. That's why the Apostle Paul in Philippians, he was able to say, I know what it is to be brought low. He says, I've had some really tough times, and I know how to abound. I've had some really good times. In any and every circumstances, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger. I've had a lot, and I've had nothing. Abundance and need. And then he says this, and this becomes for a lot of people this life verse that, you know, we quote it and we say, you know, if I just believe hard enough, I can fly. He says, I can do all things through him who gives me strength. It's not saying we can just think up, you know, I want superpowers so I can do it if I believe in God. It's saying I can win victories when God calls me to win victories. I can endure hardship when God calls me to go through hardship. I can do both because God gives me strength. No matter what's happening in my circumstances, I can exercise my faith that's strong. That's a gift that he's given to us to trust him because he is stronger than any obstacle that we have. This is so real for us. If we're going to be followers of Jesus, this needs to be something that happens every day. I started out by saying today, I believe every day God's going to give us opportunities to exercise our faith, opportunities to make choices that reflect our beliefs in faith, one way or not, yes or no. I'll live in faith or I won't. So let me give you two questions by way of practice that I hope these will be questions that you would filter through some of the decisions and how you're going to act, the kind of relationships that you have, the kind of things you're going to participate in, the kind of things you're going to say no to. Just two questions. One of them is, what am I not seeing? And there might be times where you're looking at the world and you see all the reasons why you can't do something, all of the threats, all of the dangers, all the things that scare you, all of the reasons why you shouldn't do something, why you shouldn't step out in faith, why it's too dangerous, why it's too risky, why you're going to fail. And you might see all those things right in front of you. Maybe it's all the things, that the to-dos that I'm just so busy that I don't know if I can do this thing that God has asked me to do. I don't know if I can really help people. I don't know if I can stretch myself in this way. I don't know if I can get out of my comfort zone. There's so many obstacles, but what are you not seeing? The presence of God's Holy Spirit empowering your life. The spiritual battle that God is winning, that is raging on a whole different level. What do you not see? To put your trust in the God who is greater than the threats and the dangers around you. And then secondly, this. In light of God's promised future, what is the wise thing to do? not in light of what feels good right now or what's easy right now, what's convenient right now. But if I believe that God has set eternity and he has given us this opportunity and we will live on and the things that are eternal are our love and relationship with him and our love with other people, what's the wise thing to do today in light of eternity? When you get a paycheck, what is the wise thing to do in light of God's promised eternity with temporal finances? Will you invest in eternal things, in the work of the church, in people who are needy, in causes that make a true difference, not just a temporal difference, temporal comfort? When you're considering what kind of dating relationship you should or shouldn't go into, what's the wise thing? Not just a thing that feels good today and is convenient now, but for eternity. When you think about the kind of time you spend in your career and the energy you put into titles and money versus helping people and serving people, what's the wise thing to do in light of God's promised eternal future? Not just what I'm facing today. Two questions that you can filter your decisions through, because faith is about belief and action, not just beliefs, not just a wish list for God. Have you been watching the Jays lately? Are you getting into it? A whole bunch of us are. And even if you're not a big baseball fan, there's a good chance that you've kind of jumped on the bandwagon in the last little while, right? It's a lot of fun. And something has happened, and I was told after the first service by three or four people that there's all this psychology that backed this up. But something happens when you get a team that really starts winning and people start rallying behind it. And this happened to me four or five times just this morning from the time I came into church to the first service. And I do this too sometimes. But your team starts winning. You know, you see the Jays, and we're close by. This is the local team, so we get on board. And do you know what we start saying? Hey, we had a really good game last week. Wow, we pulled out a big win. Wow, we are such a good offense. We're hitting. And we start to use we like we're on the team, right? Have you done that? I know, because a whole bunch of you, I do it too. A whole bunch of you came in this morning and said, wow, we had a really tough loss yesterday. Man, we are really hurting. You know, like this is us. Like we're actually on the team. But here's the reality. We cannot throw a 100-mile fastball. We cannot hit a major league curveball. We have not sacrificed our life to training to be baseball players. We don't even get on the field. We are sitting in the stands, or more likely on the couch, eating snacks, overweight, and unskilled. But we love to participate in the victory, right? And there's something psychological. We jump on that, and all of a sudden it's we, and we get into it, and that's a lot of fun, and I do it, and that's awesome. The reality is, we are not professional baseball players. We're fans. We sit in the stands. We sit in our couches. We watch. We live vicariously through it. We have a lot of fun doing it. The writer of Hebrews is doing the opposite. He's saying, come, be part of we. Get on the field. Let's play. You can do this. You can do this. Look at all these people. You say, I'm not a Bible hero. Hey, they weren't all winners. They didn't all jump on and have easy faith, but they chose to exercise their faith. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, you could do this too. You can play in the game. You don't have to sit in the stands. Your faith doesn't have to be just about showing up and sitting in church once a week. Your faith doesn't have to be a few things that you've written down that you say believe that don't really make a difference in your life. You can step into the game and you can live this out and you can be part of God working out in history to accomplish big things and enduring whatever this world throws at you. You can be a strong player. Exercise your faith. You can do it. You can do it. Take your beliefs and put them into action. Choose to live that way. You can do it. I want you to do one last thing. If you're taking notes, or if you haven't been taking notes, I want you to write something down at the bottom of the page. Last thing. We've been going through this whole list. We've seen all these examples. We've seen this phrase over and over and over and over. Start with this. By faith. Right, we've seen examples. By faith, Abraham. By faith, Moses. By faith, by faith, by faith. Write it down. By faith. Comma. Punctuation is important. And then write your name. By faith. Dave. And then I want you to finish the sentence. What is God putting in your heart and your mind to do? Is there an area of life that you believe God right now wants you to conquer. He wants you to share your faith. He wants you to step out and help the needy. He wants you to step out and go out of your comfort zone to do something for him courageously. Maybe there's an area of your life that you've been fearful about that he wants you to overcome. Maybe there's an area of your life, there's a habit that you haven't been able to kick, and you know God wants you to get over this hump, and it's time that you don't just think about it, but you put your faith into action and do something about it and believe that God is bigger than those things. By faith, if we were going to write about you, what do you want the next part to be? By faith, Dave. For you, what is it? Because the writer of Hebrews is saying, you don't have to live vicariously through all these people. You can do it. Step out of the stands. Step off the couch. You can be a player in the game that God has provided for us to be part of. And it doesn't depend on you. It depends on him. But he's asking you to take a step of faith. So we get in the game. You can do it. You can do it. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you've given us this great gift of faith that we can trust you, that you are worthy of our trust. God, I pray for all of us who have things in our lives, areas that we have not been exercising our faith. God, things that maybe we're scared to do. God, maybe opportunities that we're scared to take or we don't have the confidence to take. God, maybe for habits that we haven't believed that we could get over. God, I pray that you would help us to have a trust that is so deep in you and in what you can do that our actions would match it up with our beliefs. God, thank you that you are trustworthy. Thank you that you have made yourself known to us through Jesus Christ. We see you. We experience you. God, thank you that our lives can move from places where we're stuck or we're fearful or we're weak to a place where we can conquer and be successful, where we can have confidence in you and how we live, and where we can be strong because we take your strength. God, help us to take a step of faith today and this week. Help us to exercise that muscle so that it becomes strong, and that we would see you in every aspect of our lives. God, thank you that you're trustworthy. We love you. We praise you.